College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
We were expecting a weird week three, and we got it. From the ACC struggles to officiating questions to a major injury in the SEC with Felipe Franks of Florida. And as he does every Monday, Kirk Herbstreit joining us to discuss what he saw from the weekend, what he liked, what surprised him, what he can't wait to see in week four. And Herbie, I mentioned it being weird. It's weird for me because I'm out of the studio as well as you are. So it's great to be on the road here talking to you. How you doing?
I'm great. Had a fun weekend. Ames, Iowa was everything you'd hope for college game day. Unbelievable setting for the show, and really it set the tone for what, as you mentioned, we knew would be potentially an exciting and unpredictable day of college football, where typically when you don't have ranked versus ranked, strange things happen, and we got that. We'll talk about some of those things, but that was awesome. And I flew over to Syracuse, a place I hadn't been since I played, going way back to the 90s, and it was cool to see that setting and worked with Sean McDonough, something I've never done. And Clemson kind of business-like in the way they handled things and able to pull away from Syracuse, who couldn't capitalize on opportunities down in the red zone. And just, you know, the fun thing for me is when I'm calling games, I get to watch games. So it's one of the few talents I have is an ability to multitask with college football. So every week while I'm calling a game, to my right, there's a bank of TVs. So I'm calling Syracuse and Clemson and enjoying Iowa State, which was delayed, and watching that one go down to the final seconds, and watching Kentucky and Florida. And of course, I picked Kentucky, so I'm thinking, wow, they're up 21-10, and that one looks like that might happen, and give Florida credit for coming back to win. But for me, it's what a typical Saturday is, and just had a lot of fun with week three.
I got to give you credit. People don't understand how hard it is, first off, the multitask, and you're watching one game, watching another game, but you're not only just watching a couple of games, you have to talk about the current game you're watching. And the current game that you were watching was very weird, because I think that we had an assumption of Syracuse coming into the season. We haven't seen that Syracuse team. I think that we assumed that maybe they're the second best team in the ACC, and that they were going to give Clemson, you know, a game at least. We're going to just say that, a game. And then as we were watching that game, I started just, Trevor Lawrence, it's really tough because a year ago he's the phenom, he's the freshman, It's hard to ignore what this offense looks like here. He has five picks so far. He had four all of last year. We'll get to the amazing defense in a second, but what do you make of Trevor Lawrence? Does he look comfortable in your eyes in this offense right now?
I think all of us are guilty of looking at a high profile quarterback and Tua or Trevor, or you go down the list. And when there's incredible expectations and things don't always go maybe up to what those expectations are, immediately we want to look to see, what's wrong with this quarterback or what's going right with that quarterback. And you know, from following the game as closely as you do, and me being a quarterback, I always, the reason quarterbacks should deflect attention when things are going well is because the line has a lot to do with how a quarterback plays. The running game has a lot to do with how a quarterback plays. The receivers making plays for you after a catch. Look at Tua on Saturday. Tua threw, I don't know how many passes, about 7 or 8 yards downfield, and some really gifted receivers and running backs made him throw for, I don't know how many yards, almost 400 yards. So there's a lot that goes into what makes a quarterback play well or not quite be in that rhythm. And when I look at Trevor, I think it reminds me of when Deshaun, the year after he had a big year, everyone thought he would just go right through the year and throw for 350 a game. And if you remember that year, he had some growing pains, and the offense kind of had some growing pains as they were trying to kind of get things going and find that rhythm. And it reminds me a lot of that. So there are moments you look at him and you look at this offense and you say, that's kind of what we thought we'd see. There's Travis Etienne, there's Trevor, there's T. Higgins, and away we go. Then there's other moments where you say, wow, these defenses are smart right now. You know, they're thinking, They've got really tall receivers who like to get vertical. Let's just give them a little cushion. Let's back off of them and not give them those easy throws downfield. And then let's try to do our best with trying to get our safeties down and moving stunts and different things with our defensive line to try to survive against ETN. And they're winning certain series. So at moments it looks like Clemson is doing what you expect them to do. And then there's other two or three or four series in a row where you're like, man, they're just kind of, it's like I keep saying that reference of they're kind of stuck in third gear. So I think it'll eventually get there. The potential is unlimited, but I think the Lions got to do a better job. I think it's a pieces of the puzzle all have to come together. And then I think you'll see Trevor, be the beneficiary, and then he'll start to have the kind of year you expect him to have. But right now he's still growing. Everyone thinks he's, why didn't he come out now? He should sit out next year. It's like, you guys don't get it. At that position, there's more than looking good in your uniform and throwing the ball 50, 60 yards downfield. It's learning coverage. It's, wow, they're showing me too high, meaning too high safeties. A snap of the ball, it's one high, and they brought the corner blitz, and he's still at times getting caught not catching that. And so he will, but like Peyton Manning and Drew Brees and you name it, they all started somewhere and they all had to go through reps and seeing pressure and seeing disguise and learning. You don't learn that in a film room. You learn that by getting reps and making mistakes. And then the next time you're ready for it. So I feel like he's still growing and still learning. Obviously has the physical ability, but he's a work in progress, and this offense will eventually be clicking, but right now they're kind of hitting and then missing a little bit.
And when you look at who they got in front of them, Syracuse may be their last big challenge. I mean, they could do something against North Carolina. They could have some resistance, maybe some Florida State resistance, maybe Wake in November, maybe at the end of the season. Who knows what South Carolina is going to look like with their freshman quarterback in Holinsky before we start talking about the ACC championship and the playoff. But maybe his biggest challenge will be in practice up against that fantastic yeah. Clemson defense, right? Like, you know, we saw that with Alabama through the years. We saw that with Ohio State through the years and the U, where it's the opposing defense in practice during the week. Once you can survive that, Saturday becomes easy. I look at the options that he has, and of course we know about ETN in the backfield and Higgins and Ross to the outside, but you saw it Saturday night, Amari Rodgers and that quick turnaround coming from that off that injury, for him to play the way he played, what does he bring to this offense to make this offense even better?
How exciting is that to see a guy come back? And I mean, I remember years ago, Jerry Rice came back from an ACL. I think he was one of the first ones to ever come back in about a year. You know, and before that, maybe less than a year. Before that, it was, oh my gosh, could be career ending and he's not quite going to come back the same. And now we see with technology today, with the way they're able to do these procedures and the rehab and the dedication that some of these athletes are willing to put in. I don't know if I've ever seen a player like Amari Rodgers who sustains an injury and I don't know how many days it was, but it's under 6 months. He comes back. And that play was symbolic of all the work that he put in, because he's a physical yards after the catch kind of guy. He's basically a running back playing the slot. You know, for years it was Hunter Renfro, really quick, change of direction, make incredible catches, and he was a tough matchup and obviously doing well in the NFL. Amari Rodgers, same position, very different. And you get him the ball out in space. As you saw, that low center gravity, you come in high on him, boom, stiff arm, you're going to the ground, and then he's got the speed to be able to do something after it. So, and he's and having sons on the team, I can tell you firsthand, and one of them's a receiver, my son looks at Amari Rodgers like he's looking at Zeus. Like he's like, Dad, like in our room, which is an incredibly talented room with T. Higgins and Justin Ross and these other freshmen, but Amari Rodgers sets the tone for not just that room, but the whole team. And how could he not, with that work ethic to come back and what he does before practice and after practice? And these players see that. And so for him to come in and be rewarded with getting just it was right after a big interception that Syracuse had. They had the ball at the the plus nine. They're ready to go in at 17-6 and make a game of this and give Clemson credit. They come up with a big interception a couple plays later. What still was a game. Amari Rodgers just takes a kind of a short pass off into the right, stiff arm, stays in bounds and takes it to the house. So this shows you how explosive this offense can be, but it was awesome to see a guy that probably when no one was watching, he's in there working, in there sweating, in there wondering, is it really worth it? And then gets rewarded, came back against A&M 2 weeks ago, and then has that big moment to put him up 24-6 in the second half against Syracuse.
Yeah, 166 days after surgery with the ACL. He's like the college version of Adrian Peterson in that comeback, which is incredible. Real quick with the defense, much was made that how much they lost, of course, to the NFL. Four returning starters here. What are you seeing from Venables in this defense so far after 3 weeks?
All right, if you're going to play Clemson, here's the thing. It's not to get too technical on film and looking at what they do, because, you know, I think as fans, we just kind of watch guys make plays and get excited. You know, hey, you had a sack. Hey, you had an interception. But they are, it's like they're speaking a different language in 2019. They've been speaking English for forever, and now they're speaking Spanish. You know, and so as an offensive coordinator getting ready to face Clemson forever, you would see Brent Venables. And of course, he's got four defensive linemen. We talked, you know, on and on and on about Christian Wilkins and that group and how great they were and how dominant they could be. And then on third down, you might see some exotics and some different looks to change it up. But he really relied on that front four to set the tone. With those guys all flushed through the program, they win their national title, comes back this year, with still talent up there, but a lot of inexperience. And now all his real experience and real talent is in the back end, where he's gotten tremendous depth. So what he's gone to is three defensive linemen. And so he's got a nose guard that's head up against the center, and then he's got two more defensive linemen that are matched up against, they're called a 4-eye, so on the inside of the offensive tackle. So you have three down linemen, and many times he'll play just with two linebackers, and then they'll play with six defensive backs. Mm-hmm. And that is very unusual for offenses to get ready for a three down lineman, two linebackers, six defensive backs. Look, and when you look at what he has with Kayvon Wallace and Isaiah Simmons and Tanner Muse, is those guys kind of act as linebackers slash safeties slash nickelbacks. All three of them are moving constantly and doing different things. And I'm telling you, this defense is more difficult to prepare for this year as far as XOs than it was last year because of how many variations and the flexibility of it because of what he's doing with the way he's matching up. So this is going to be, to me, when it's all said and done, as much as people want to talk about Trevor Lawrence, the defense and Brent Venables and how exotic and how different they're playing this year is going to become a big story when they get down the road into the ACC championship, they get into the playoff, maybe a national title. Everybody's going to be talking about Brent Venables and his defense because they're going to be a handful, and not just with talent, but how they're out-scheming you with the flexibility and versatility of those safeties led by Simmons and Muse and Kayvon Wallace.
It's interesting you bring that up because a year ago, much was made that, you know, the decision to go with Trevor Lawrence over Kelly Bryant was to get ready for Alabama at the end of the season. And maybe this is the decision. Hey, we have these six D-backs to counter the speed and the talent that Alabama has at wide out there.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, everything you could talk about. You look at what they can do with Ruggs and Waddle and Judy. And maybe this is, I'm not saying they can slow them down, but you have enough depth out there, right? In that secondary.
Yeah.
As you get ready potentially long term.
Yeah. And the other thing is when you can create doubt, and case in point, the national championship, Tua, and talking to Tua a couple weeks ago about that national title, he said, man, that guy at Clemson, he said he is so good, talking about Brent Venables, not the players. He was talking about the scheme and showing him one thing. People don't realize, you see Tua just throw an interception, a couple interceptions. Man, what's wrong with Tua? No. Tua, who looked like a video game almost the entire year, implodes in that game, and it had everything to do with the different looks, pre-snap this look, and then post-snap going to another look, and that is something that this year, with that 3-2-6 look, or that 3-3-5 look, depending if he goes with three linebackers, it really can affect the quarterback. Even we'll see if Tua is ready down the road if they match up. But if you create doubt with a quarterback and he thinks this, but he's not sure, and he waits, and then he throws, that's how you get a hand on the ball. That's how you come up with interceptions. That's how you create a lot of anxiety for offensive linemen and pass protection. That poor quarterback, Tommy DeVito, at Syracuse, he was sacked, I think, 8 times. It felt like he was sacked 15 times. That offensive line, yep. They didn't know if Clemson was coming or going. They didn't know where the pressure was coming from. And I'm telling you, that is not a Syracuse thing. That will become a Clemson defense thing every single week. Offensive linemen are going to struggle to protect their quarterback because they're not going to know where that pressure is coming from because of the way Clemson, again, is disguising this year. And, yes, it will not only prepare them for Alabama maybe down the road, but really in the spread era that we live in, pretty much every offense that you face every week is trying to get the ball out in space. And the more speed you have to defend that and the more creative you can get with trying to create confusion, the better off you're going to be as a defense.
We'll be back in a minute with the best thing that Herbie saw this weekend. But first, a word from Allstate. Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc., etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, and unexpected weather. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. So Clemson's defense already off to a fast start, and you can make a case that's the best thing you're going to see on Saturday. What's the best thing you saw on Saturday, Kurt?
Oh, my gosh. I would probably have to start with the way the Iowa-Iowa State game went and the way, you know, it's a rivalry game. A game that went back and forth, and a game that had to deal with delays. And for Iowa to be able to go on the road in that setting and take on a pretty good Iowa State team and find a way to win a game, I think is something that stood out to me. I'm a traditionalist. I love Penn State and Pitt. I go back to when I was a lot younger and used to watch that game. It was usually late in the year and there was snowflakes coming down, and I just love mm-hmm. the uniform combination yep. of those teams on the field together. And the fact it was really competitive and physical, and it got really good in the second half. I really enjoyed that one. And then the other one that stood out to me was Maryland and Temple. We kind of warned people. Maryland was becoming a team that was getting a lot of attention for the way they were scoring points with Mike Locksley. You and I talked about that last week with Josh Jackson and how much fun they've been and what they did to Syracuse. And I think we said, be careful this week. You're Temple tough. I know you know all about how physical mm-hmm. they can be. And Rod Carey comes in there with an attitude. And the way Temple played in that game, the style of football in which they played with, really didn't surprise me. But it kind of lived up to the billing of what we expected. And then the way it came down to a few kind of goal line stands there by Temple's defense had to withstand some pressure there and just kind of escaped. But that was probably the most competitive and fun game of the day.
Not a lot of fun for me. I was stressed all the while.
Was it like eight Bruh. Snaps there in the last yep. few minutes inside yeah. the 10-yard line?
When the punt goes 7 yards and your heart sinks and drops like that ball, let me tell you. But it was a huge win for Rod Carey, and a lot of credit goes to him. and how the toughness that we saw from Temple. Now, coaching played a huge role, and Narduzzi's going to get crushed on that fourth down, deciding to go for, I mean, to go for the 19-yard field goal when you're down by seven in a game like that on the road. What was your thoughts when you saw that? Were you surprised by that? Because I as a kid that grew up watching Penn State Pitt, I'm screaming at the TV saying, I can't believe you're doing that. You got to go for it. It's fourth and one at the one.
Yeah, and I know he was very defensive going after armchair quarterbacks. But he made a point saying it was a two-possession. In my mind, it was still a two-possession game, you know, down seven. That we needed to get a field goal there, get the ball back, had confidence in his defense to get the ball back and get back down there and have a chance maybe to win the game. My feeling is, first guessing, watching that game, their offense didn't have a ton of success. There weren't numerous times that they were down inside that Penn State 5-yard line. How many chances do you think you're going to get at the 1-yard line, 2-yard line down in there? I personally, and I love Pat to death, he's a defensive coach. He kind of approaches the game the way he learned it from Mark D'Antonio, who, by the way, learned it from Jim Tressel. So it typically err on the side of being conservative with the approach as a head coach. So I understand that look. But for me, it's a rivalry game. You're an underdog. You're on the road. Nobody really expects you to win that game. To me, you go down swinging. You know, you take a chance. Mm-hmm. You go for the touchdown and you see what you can do from there. But it had everything to do with they weren't having a great day offensively, and they finally put a little momentum together there on that drive. And I personally am a guy, from a player's perspective, I think players feed off of that. And if you go for it and you don't make it, you know, you put the Penn State offense in a really tough spot where they're probably going to go three and out because they're going to run the ball, be probably conservative themselves, punt the ball. You get the ball back at midfield probably, and now you got a shot again, get a little bit of momentum going. So I don't know. I don't know if he'd ever wants to admit that he made a mistake there. And I hate to second guess coaches, but that was a first guess, I think, for most people that were watching that game. I really expected him to go for that there.
And let's just hope. Let's just hope down the road that the administrators can talk sense into each other and they reschedule and they decide to get this rivalry back on tap down the road. And that could be 2026, 2027, who knows, but we need to have Pitt Penn State, I think, part of the college football rivalries. As a kid that grew up watching it and is fully aware of it, I do miss the Texas A&Ms of the world in those games. It was great seeing Colorado, Nebraska. Like, those are the games that have to matter because they matter to the fan bases.
Yeah.
They have to matter to the administrations on both sides to see if they can make it work.
I talked with a few ADs this week, high profile ADs, that have interesting takes on this. And I'm not going to say who I talked to, but I just tell you, that his comment, one of the guys I talked to, his comment was administrators basically have to put their egos to the side, and these things can be done. The realignment did not ruin the rivalries of college football. You might be in different conferences now, but there has to be a willingness on both sides to come together and do what's right. I mean, this sport is built on traditions, and these rivalries are a big part of that. You and I can close our eyes, or you and I can reminisce about Penn State and Pitt, and you can bring up whatever game you want to bring up. Oh yeah, I remember that one. Do you remember? You remember that one game when Blackledge did this, and you know, or whatever it is, Hugh Green or whatever. That's what makes this sport what it is. And we could talk about Oklahoma and Nebraska and so many different rivalries that are out there that we all love. And in an era where the younger fan bases, you know, these student sections, they show up maybe for a half, they lose interest, it's a blowout, and they leave. You need big games. You need interest. And what better way than to hold on to Penn State and Pitt and OU Nebraska and whatever other rivalries that are out there that we're missing? That is such a lifeline that we need in this sport, and ADs on both sides have to see that and have to be able to get away from the bottom line. We have to get seven home games or six, whatever it is. And, you know, these home and homes are hurting us. You got to get away from that, and you got to see how important it is to do the right thing for your players, for your fans, for everybody, for the sport. We need these games to stay alive, and realignment has really crushed that part of it.
We'll be back in a minute. Herbie tells us which team had the biggest win this weekend. But first, a word from Carhartt. You know who works hard? Rookies. Sure, they make mistakes, but no one's got more to prove. Knowing each day is another opportunity to outwork them all and earn the respect they deserve. Point is, no one outworks a rookie. That's why after 130 years, Carhartt still approaches each day with the passion and work ethic of a company that's 130 years young. Same hunger, same determination, same giant chip on the shoulder. And in the same way a rookie needs to work hard to earn the respect of their peers, everything Carhartt makes has to keep earning the respect of the hardworking people who wear it. That's why Carhartt still works like a rookie, and why Carhartt will keep outworking them all for the next 130 years too. Visit Carhartt.com/CFB to learn more and shop this season's hardest working gear. Week three, as you look back here, and obviously I mentioned it from the top, and there was a huge storyline coming in. We heard the Bear talk about it, of course, on College Game Day with not having any of those sexy top 25 matchups. But can you walk away and say a program had the biggest win this weekend? Is there a team in your mind that's that's the biggest win?
Well, UCF beating Stanford, and this might end up being, who knows, a 7-win Stanford team. It's not mm-hmm. necessarily going to be a Stanford team that's probably going to be chasing a Pac-12 title. But I've been the biggest guy probably out there going back four or five years ago when UCF kind of exploded on the scene. I was like, wow, look at this team. They're really good. They're really scoring a lot of points, and let's see how they do. And they wanted it now. There wasn't a lot of patience. They wanted the respect now. You know, and they had their parade, and they were the national champs, you know, a few years ago. And I resisted. I said, well, you know, let's when you come from nowhere, you have to have an ability to build up some equity. And they've done that. They deserve all the credit in the world for these last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, what Scott Frost was able to recreate, because I know they were winning there with George O'Leary, but he got it really to a different level. And now Josh Heupel has come in, and they just continue to play great football. So I'm surprised. I think, what are they, up to 17? They should be in that 9-10 range, personally. I think that because we've now seen this brand, and they've been able to beat some high-profile teams, and they've been able to compete with some high-profile teams in bowl games, that's how you build it. That's how Boise State built it. And now I think when you beat a Stanford and the way they beat them, they need to be taken more seriously. They need to get more respect. And I think this team in 2019 is the beneficiary of what they've done in 17 and 18. And now people need to start to kind of say, uh-oh. And I think that conference is better than I think people want to give the conference maybe some of the respect around the country. So they beat Stanford the way they did. And to me, that was probably the biggest win of the weekend as far as the magnitude and what it could potentially mean to the college football playoff down the road, because they blew Stanford out. I don't care what the score ended up, 45-27. It felt like 60-10. I mean, it was a butt-kicking. And the athletic ability continues to shine, and the speed of that offense continues to be on display every single time they play. So I went from kind of being a guy that had my arm out a few years ago to last year starting to kind of really embrace them. And this year, really, I mean, I got a freshman quarterback. And it's just like they just don't miss a beat. Doesn't matter. So I think that was the most impressive win, and a team that I think the nation needs to start to really start to pay attention to.
I'm with you 100%. And listen, I know this is a down year for Stanford, but Dylan Gabriel looked fantastic, that freshman quarterback. And for Heupel to have the options where you have Brandon Wimbush come in, and then you have Darrell Mack, who's healthy now, and they, you look at the depth of that quarterback position, he's like, I'm going to go with the true freshman. The true freshman was fearless, 4 touchdowns. He was fantastic. And UCF is looking for Power 5 teams. And now they take care of Stanford. Now they got Pitt on the road. Again, I'm with you. I think that at 17, you know, this past week, I think they're a team that definitely deserves to be somewhere between 10, 11, 12 when you look at the rankings, because they have deserved it, especially how they've come out. And I like this quarterback a lot.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. And he's got so many playmakers around him. And again, I'm probably the opposite of the guy that says, you know what, let's be nice to the group of five. Let's give the little guy a chance. You know, if you earn it, then I become that guy. And I feel mm-hmm. like they have earned that. And that's why I'm on board. I was never on board. And I know a lot of UCF fans, they weren't a big fan of mine because, like I said, they wanted it right now. You know, and that team with Scott Frost a few years ago that ended up winning the league championship, and that was when they had their parade. And I think I was one of those guys that was kind of offended or almost taken back by what in the heck, what is going on here kind of thing. I'm not saying I was right. I'm just saying I'm being honest. That was my reaction. Then you watch them play last year, and you're like, man, you know, this thing has staying power. Like, they're not going away, and they're good. Now, forget all the politics, forget all the, like, just put them on a field with somebody, they can play. Mm-hmm. And they deserve credit. And that's why I'm saying what they did to Stanford, I think they just kind of dropped the hammer to remind people in 2019, we're still out here, and yet the voters are still kind of lukewarm on where they're putting them. I guess, maybe, what are they up to 15 this week? Maybe they're up to 15 in the poll. So I still feel that they should be higher. I think they're going to continue to win, and if they do, it'd be very, very interesting to see as teams lose ahead of them how the voters are going to be willing to – are they going to put a ceiling or a cap on them, or are they going to treat them kind of like they did in the past with Kellen Moore and Boise State? And, hey, you know, they're beating teams. Let's keep moving them up, moving them up, moving them up, because I promise you by week 8, they're going to be undefeated. Teams are going to be losing. And are they going to hit at 9 and just kind of stay there? Or are they going to keep moving up to 7 and to 5 and to 4? I mean, what will happen? It'll be a very, very good discussion if they keep winning. Big game for them will be right around Halloween when they go to Philly and take on Temple. That will not be an easy game, as we saw Temple with Rod Carey. We just talked about the game they had against Maryland over the weekend.
Yeah, like, and you, as you mentioned too, you like the conference too. That conference, everybody in that conference has to keep on winning to help UCF down the line. When you play a Cincinnati on the road in early October, yep. like you said, at the end of the month, you got Temple and potentially Houston the following week. Those teams have to continue to keep on getting better and win so the resume looks good to the outside voters.
I would add Memphis to that, because if they're able to,
absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, if Memphis keeps winning games, that's a team, another team that maybe doesn't get some of the credit that they deserve. But Coach Norvell doing an amazing job there. They look good. They're scoring. That's another team that just scores a lot of points. If they continue to win, boy, you talk about a showdown potentially with Memphis and UCF the way you had it a couple of years ago. And it'd be interesting to see how the College Football Playoff Committee would look at that game in 2019 versus how they viewed it. I think it was in 2017 when it just was not enough for UCF to come close to being in the discussion with the College Football Playoff. Two years later, if it comes down to that and those two teams are still winning, could it potentially be different? We'll have to wait and see.
Great point, too, with Memphis and mentioning them. The last 2 years have been fantastic in the American title. They put up 62 points in that game. It was phenomenal in 2017. We'll be back in a minute as we ask Kirby about the biggest matchup this upcoming weekend. But first, a word from Goodyear. Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven. Hey, before we let you go, as we look at week 4, I want to get your thoughts on the game you can't wait to see. And obviously, we've got a lot of really good choices. What's the one that you want to see?
Oh, man. You're right. There are a lot of different games. I mean, for different reasons. I mean, Florida-Tennessee, it's a game that every year used to really matter, and with everything that's been happening at Tennessee, that one stands out. I want to see Michigan's offense this week in Madison after a bye week to try to get things right. Now they take on Wisconsin, and Jimmy Leonard, a defense coordinator. Wisconsin had given up a point coming into that game, so we'll see how Michigan's offense does, and it's always a tough place to play. Going into Madison, that to me is a great game. In the SEC, we've got a nice one with Auburn taking on Texas A&M. I think, you know, in the SEC West, every win, every opportunity is so big. So that one is another one that really stands out to me because, for obvious reasons, you need to try to get ahead early, in that league. And then where game day is going is probably the biggest game of the weekend, with Notre Dame and Georgia in Athens. Notre Dame does not have a conference championship. Their margin often is very, very small when it comes to, you know, people just assume, well, if they're undefeated, they're going to be in. Yet there are other people that say, hey, listen, every time they get into the playoff, they don't do well. So why do they get the benefit of the doubt? So this is a big stage that Notre Dame needs to take advantage of. And you've got Georgia, who still has much bigger games down the road if they were to lose this game. So I think there's a lot more on Notre Dame's shoulders and what's at stake. They need to capitalize on this game. And I had Notre Dame a couple weeks ago, and I still feel like – I know they played better last week. It was kind of a scrimmage against New Mexico. Mm-hmm. So how will they be on the road this time against a very athletic Georgia defense? Ian Book's going to have to play very, very well for Notre Dame to have much of a chance of winning that game on the road.
Herbie, enjoy Athens. It's going to be a wild scene and of course, a night game there. We're going to get Pollock's thoughts on Wednesday. I know he's jacked up on the experience of playing a night game in Athens, and with Notre Dame in town, that entire city will be rocking leading into the game. And honestly, that's a game with playoff implications. Cannot wait for it. Want to thank you for joining us here today.
Absolutely. Have a great week.
Want to thank Kirk Herbstreit for joining us to get his thoughts on the weekend's biggest storylines. We're also going to try something pretty cool next week. We're going to allow you, the listeners, to submit questions that Herbie will answer. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts with your questions there, and the best questions will make the air, and Herbstreit will answer them. Also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate, Carhartt, and Goodyear. Ahead on Wednesday, Pollock joins us along with Ivan Maisel to break down the best of the week and the players you should be talking about to impress your friends. Big thanks to our producer for the last few weeks, Gabe Bassane. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the CFB podcast with Herbie and Pollock. And of course, remember, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate it.